Justice Zelon, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
We appreciate having this update on such a current topic. And so I'd ask, the floor is yours.
Thank you. Thank you, Chief, and thank you, Council. I know you have an incredibly busy agenda today, but I did want to bring this information to you because it is about something that is exactly about your agenda today. There have been four hearings. I would say they are historic hearings that have been held in the last 2 months. These hearings came together in the fall. And it was the effort of a great number of people, but they were hearings sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce, the State Bar of California, and the California Commission on Access to Justice. And before I tell you who our honorary co-chairs were, I want to tell you why we had the hearings. The hearings had to do with the situation where at the same time that the court's budget was being cut by an unimaginable amount, the resources available to legal services, which helps people come into court, was also being cut by an unimaginable amount. And so at the intersection of those two cuts lies a true crisis for the people of California. And so what these hearings were about was gathering information to make the legislature understand that when they cut the courts, they're not cutting some ephemeral, imaginary entity. They are cutting the people and the businesses of California. And that's why our co-sponsors came together to sponsor these hearings, and that's why we had the hearings. The honorary co-chairs of our hearing began with the Chief Justice, Joe Dunn from the State Bar, Erica Frank from the Chamber of Commerce, the Attorney General, Assemblyman Pure, Senator Evans, John Streeter, who's the president of the State Bar, and Erwin Chemerinsky of the UCI Law School. So it was a very thoughtful group. And we had the four hearings. The people who came were not the usual suspects. This was not the court family and the legal services family talking to each other as we so often do. These were private lawyers. These were businesses. These were people who use the services of the court, often who use the self-help services, the people who come in represented by the nonprofits that serve them, and people who make it all on their own, talking to us about the double whammy that this is about. And the message from the hearings was people need the courts. Business needs the courts. This is not something that is not going to affect the future of California. I want to tell you some of the stories we heard, because the human face of this is what these hearings were all about. And the human face is going to be what we present in the report that is going to be prepared next month, will be available for this body and will also be available for the legislature. Because Senator Evans and Assemblyman Feuer were involved in this project, they will get the report very early and be able to use it, hopefully to good advantage in making others understand what this crisis is about. So some of the stories we heard. In Los Angeles County, a motorist has to wait 9 months to contest a ticket. And what that uncertainty means is that they may have job problems and they may have other problems because they have traffic matters unresolved and outstanding. Some counties, from large to small, are cutting back on court reporters, requiring litigants who can barely afford to come into court to begin with to cover expenses up front, which for many of them is impossible, or have no record on which to proceed, meaning that they essentially have no right of appeal. Custody battles are now being delayed by 4 or more months, and in one court, custody matters are now being set for 2013. What this means to our children is really unimaginable. Small claims court affects businesses and small owners, and we've just heard about small claims. People are waiting in line hours and hours and hours, and sometimes an entire day, only to be told they need to come back and begin waiting in line again the next day, which means they've lost a day of work, they've lost a day with their family, and they still haven't resolved their issues. In one case, a man waited in his courthouse because there was a custody battle and his wife was trying to take the child away out of the state. And if he didn't get it filed in time, she would leave and he'd be having to go across the country to get his son back. The security personnel told him to leave the courthouse at 3:30, a half hour before closing time. And at that point, it was too late, and the matter could not be heard before his wife left the state with his child. A dad in Placer County was trying to stay current with child support payments, but the amount had been set when he made $60,000 a year. And then he became unemployed and finally found a job that paid less than much less than his previous salary. His child support payments had become fully half of his income. And when he filed a motion to modify his child support order, he had to wait a couple of months before he could get it set, at which point he lost his apartment because he was making the payments. He had nowhere to visit his child, who was a special needs child who lives in another county. Another father was supposed to have child over Thanksgiving, picking him up from school on Friday before Thanksgiving. But the mother decided not to send the child to school so the father couldn't do that. The court was closed, and he lost his visitation with his child because there was no one to hear his ex parte. A limited liability corporation, a small corporation which owns a piece of rental property, tried to file an unlawful detainer case in pro per. When told they needed to have an attorney, they went to get one, but the court was having a closure week, so they couldn't process the papers, and at best, it would be weeks before they could file the unlawful detainer. On the other side, an unlawful detainer defendant was turned away at 4 o'clock because the staff couldn't handle it, missed his response deadline, and was defaulted. In July, a Vietnamese-speaking woman came into a temporary restraining order clinic because her boyfriend was forcing her to have sex with him over a period of days. The court did not act that day because of calendar problems. She couldn't return to her apartment out of fear. She found shelter for her and her two children over the weekend at a shelter. She missed 2 days of work. She worked in a nail salon, and Saturday and Sunday were her most productive days in a nail salon. She missed those days because she had to protect her children, and her boyfriend had taken her car. The court did finally issue the TRO the next Monday and set the permanent restraining order for August. A Vietnamese interpreter was requested. The court didn't get one. The hearing was continued until November. A week before the hearing, they called to confirm the interpreter and was told no one was available. And so the hearing has now been continued until the end of January of next year. This woman still has no peace. She still has no security. And our courts have let her down. Finally, 65% of the legal aid providers told us that they observed negative effects on their clients from the court funding cuts, with specific concerns in family law and children's services, including increased difficulty in accessing services and substantial delay in getting orders signed. These are the circumstances that are facing the people and businesses in California that we heard about over the course of four hearings. And these are what we now know is the human effect of the cuts to our courts and to legal services. And I wanted to let counsel know today what we had found as you are considering the matters in front of you. And I promise you that this report will include all of the stories that we have heard, because this is the human story that has been lost in all the budget discussions today. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have any at this point.
Thank you, Justice Elena. Senator Evans.
I don't have a question. I just have a comment, something to add, actually. And thank you very much for the presentation. It's just heartbreaking to hear these stories, and it happens every day. But I wanted to mention that in the Capitol in January or February, I'm going to be doing my own hearing on the impacts of all of these cuts, and would love to have access to that information, which I guess you're going to give me in a report. And that report will be front and center in that hearing. But my hope is to elevate the awareness of all of the details of what is happening in our courts on a day-to-day basis and the impact this is having on the lives of real people so that senators and assembly members will get that message.
And Senator Evans, we have transcripts from all of the hearings. All of the hearings were reported by a court reporter as well as being videotaped. So if you need information before the report, we can get you those transcripts and tapes.
Thank you.
Thank you, Justice Zeland. Justice Miller.
I just wanted to commend you and the Access Commission and especially Justice Roby for undertaking this, and thank you for the time and effort that you've put into this.
Welcome.
Justice Zeland, I want to add my respect and admiration for the work you've done on One Justice. In addition to knowing of these hearings and being in contact with people who gave testimony and observing them, I think this is the core of the message that we need to convey. Instead of sounding like in terms of closed doors, instead of sounding like a structure of closed doors and long lines, it's these stories that exemplify the true impact of the people we serve, the people who the legislature serves, and the people whom the executive branch serves. And I would be very interested in having a transcript of this as part of a talking point to bring to the legislature, to bring a human mm-hmm. accounting of what this means in terms of the public we all serve. So we'll be in touch with that, and I appreciate all of your efforts. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and I'll make sure you get that transcript.
Thank you.
Sure.
Yes, Justice Baxter.
I think the Open Courts Coalition would also find this information extremely useful. A coalition of lawyers throughout the state that will be lobbying on behalf of the judicial branch.
I will be happy to serve as a conduit for anyone who wants the information and making sure that it gets to them.
Thank you, Justice Zeland.
We've captured your testimony, Justice, on video, and so your hours now in terms of your presentation, and Ms. Kozak will follow up with you on some additional clips that we may want to get, and Ms. Holton as well. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Kim Turner.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment that I was a presiding panelist on the San Francisco hearing, and while we didn't have many litigants come to that hearing, only one young woman presented an issue that she had where access was difficult. What we did hear was from foundations who, the Van Loben Cells Foundation, the Markland Foundation, State Bar Foundation, and Marin Community Foundation, who are also struggling with how to fill the gap that, you know, as government backs away from its responsibility to fund equal access programs, and the foundations are trying to, to step up to the plate. I believe it was Van Loben Cells told us that long-term strategy is to spend down all of their money in their trust and to essentially put themselves out of business just funding these programs because the need is so great and the number of dollars is shrinking. So that was a very sobering bit of testimony. But in addition to that, we also heard about many innovative sort of multidisciplinary ideas that I think give us reason to hope that with less silo thinking, more interdisciplinary thinking, more good minds coming to the table to try to solve problems from a number of different perspectives, and to really look at the court as being one aspect or one component of the safety net that's underneath the poor, the working poor, those that are vulnerable, most vulnerable in our society, that we can actually perhaps leverage these other relationships to create a more seamless system and a better system for these litigants. So I just want to say that while certainly the news was bleak on the funding front, the ideas are rich, and that, with a little bit of ingenuity and time and attention, we can actually bring these into sharp relief and try to move some of these ideas forward.
I think the great concern that we heard from a number of people is that innovative programs where community foundations, community groups, and the courts have been working together through self-help, through specialty courts, and other things are the kinds of things that may fall victim to the budget cuts we're looking at next year when a court is faced with the choice of keeping a criminal courtroom open or keeping open some kind of what's viewed as a more ancillary service, mm-hmm. that those innovative ideas, those things that have filled the gap in to some degree, are going to be lost. And that was a great deal of the fear looking forward.
Right.
Can I have some?
Thank you. Judge Rosenberg and then Justice Hall.
Thank you very much for that presentation. You know, at the trial court level, of course, we see this sort of thing every day. But I don't think the public and all the members of the executive branch and all the members of the legislative branch truly appreciate the impact. I mean, it's one thing to talk about furloughs and staff layoffs, but it's a completely different dimension when you understand the impacts upon real people. It's unfortunate to some extent that the members of the press, the judicial press, have left the room here at this moment, but I'm sure that this is just the beginning of the sharing of this level of information, not the end. And I really think it's important to share this information. Thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Justice Zeland, I appreciate the appearance also and the very compelling stories that you have brought to us. The thing that I fear, frankly, and I fervently hope does not come to pass, is, for instance, the Vietnamese woman that you refer to, another woman in similar circumstances, instead of having to live in a shelter with her children for a couple of days, indeed cannot avoid an abusive husband, and one that would do violence to her or her children. And I hope, as all of us do, that with Senator Evans' help, with your help, with Assemblyman Fuhrer's help, that we can get the attention of the legislature and bring to them this type of message in this compelling way, so it doesn't take that type of catastrophe to get attention paid to the problems we're facing here. Thank you.
Thank you once again.
Just one final comment. Justice Zeland, as a member of the Access Commission, I really salute you for your leadership within the commission and the good work on this project, which is important in putting a face. I mean, the commission is the Commission on Access to Justice, and to put faces on that access is such an important project and role. So thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you once again.
Thank you.